You almost got the duct tape lesson again. All right. Now we're off. Well, you ever overthink things? Ever spend too much time looking at a subject and you just gotta take a step back? Spent a lot of time looking at this text for this week and had a lot of different ideas. Well, this would be good to add in. And that, well, that's another good aspect. And I had a lot of stuff, and I came to yesterday trying to figure out how am I going to juggle all this stuff. And eventually heard a voice saying, don't try to juggle everything. Do less. So this may not be a long sermon if that's okay with you. I don't know if anybody's going to riot for not going long. But I thought I was going to spend some time looking at one of the more fascinating characters in the Gospels, as from my, in my opinion. And an idea that might seem strange on the surface of it. I'm going to suggest that there was one person in the Gospels that Jesus seemed to trust the most or have the most trust in. And it's not any of the people that we might think of first. The person that Jesus seemed to have the most trust in was a demon-possessed man. Not just one demon, lots of them. We talked somewhat recently about some of the ways that Jesus taught in the book of Mark. And one of the things that he does in Mark that he doesn't seem to do in the same way in the other Gospels is he keeps telling people not to tell others who he is. We talked about this is called the messianic secret, where Jesus does something incredible for somebody and then he says, now don't tell anybody about that. Right? In Mark 1, he heals somebody with leprosy and he says, see that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest. When he raised Jairus' daughter, as he gave them strict orders that no one should know about this. There's even the scene in Mark chapter 8 when Jesus is revealing his purpose as the Messiah to his disciples. And I put this in as one of the readings in the bulletin, where he's talking with them and he asks, who do the people say I am? And this is another thing in Mark. Everybody seems to be asking, who is Jesus? Who is this? And they answered, John the Baptist, some say. Elijah, others say. And still others, one of the prophets. And he asked them, but who do you say I am? And Peter answered him, you are the Messiah. And he sternly ordered them not to tell anyone about him. It's this strange thing that Jesus seemed to not trust people to get the message right, maybe. He didn't want them to go tell. And other times, people come to Jesus proclaiming their faith. Say, we see what you've done, and we know that God is with you. And he doesn't seem to trust those people. He wants to mess with them. He wants to put them to the test. He just seems to have this way about him, especially in Mark, where he kind of keeps people at a distance. But he didn't do that with people who had demons. And if you read through Mark, there are a lot of them. The first miracle that Jesus did in Mark was casting out a demon. And there were several of them that followed. And Jesus seemed to have a special kind of compassion towards these demoniacs. And here in Mark 5, where we'll be looking at, he heals this demoniac called Legion. You may be familiar with the story. The reason we know his name is because Jesus asked him his name. And as far as I can find, maybe somebody will come up to me later and say, oh, you missed something. This is the only time that Jesus asked somebody their name in the Gospels. And that may not seem much to you and me. You know, that's one of the first things you do when you meet somebody, right? You tell them your name, you get their name. But try to imagine what life might have been like for this man. He's forced to live in caves. Caves are where you keep dead people, right? They say, you want a place where you can be, you go with the dead people. People try to tie you down with ropes and chains, and that's only when someone will actually come near you at all. Remember, they want to put you off with the dead people. And all of this, all of the way that people respond to this man isn't actually responding to who he is, but responding to what has taken over him. Imagine something inside of him wants to scream out, that's not me, that's the demons. Literally experiencing hell on earth. And you can't blame others for wanting nothing to do with you. You don't want anything to do with you either in this situation. This guy, he didn't want to be what he was either. As he was cutting himself, inflicting wounds and gashes, trying to force this evil out. Now I say try to imagine that. And how are you doing? Is that going very successfully? If it is, you're doing better than me. I can't picture that sort of thing. When I study for a sermon, when I'm working with a narrative, one of the things I try to do is I call it the shoes in the text. And we did this on a Tuesday, maybe on a Wednesday also sometime. I try to put myself in the shoes of each character and try to figure out what they might be feeling, try to get a sense for what's going on. But when I come to this guy called Legion, I can come up with descriptions. I can see what's being said, and I can think about some of the things that must be going on, but I can't really bring myself to even imagine that situation. Can you? It's tough. To try to imagine the depth of this pain and desperation and isolation. His situation and his life is so far removed from my experience that I have a hard time even beginning to feel his hurt. But to this hurt, Jesus responds with kindness. What's your name? Now, his reaction to Jesus, if you're familiar with the narrative, was to try to keep Jesus as far away as possible. Right? The demons within him call out, "What do you want to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" And it's actually a phrase that's difficult to translate. If you have different versions, there's a lot of different ways that "what do you want to do with me" is translated. Sometimes is "what do you have to do with me?" What is there between us? It's actually kind of an odd phrase in Greek that actually just says "what to you and to me." What is there between you and me? It's what I think he's saying is essentially, why should you even be here? We have nothing in common. He says, there is nothing to be said. There's no conversation to be had. There's nothing to do between the Son of God and the man filled with a legion of demons. You had to imagine he felt that way too, when he sees the difference between the two of them. Son of God, filled with Satan's spirits. Crowds flocking after Jesus. He can't go anywhere without crowds forming around him. Crowds fleeing from Legion. People want nothing to do with him. He sees Jesus and he sees the opposite of everything within him. So he calls out and says, "Swear to me that you won't torture me." And Jesus says, "What's your name?" Jesus says, in all of this protest, in all of your swearing, there's nothing in common between them. He says, "I want to know you. I want to know your name." He wants to show that they do have something in common. That he wants to show that God cares about this man in such a low place. You see, Jesus, I think, understood what Legion was feeling. I don't know, there are many who could, but Jesus did. Jesus knew the enemy who was inside of him. Jesus knew the demons, just as they knew him for who he was, the Son of God. He understood. He has had conversations with Satan. He knows about him. In Mark, Jesus never questioned the faith of a demoniac. There were two times when parents of a demon-possessed child came to Jesus and he questioned the parents, questioned their faith. But no questions are asked of the child in that way. And the times when the demoniac himself comes before Jesus, he doesn't ask the questions in the same way. He doesn't ask about their faith. And I think maybe that's because, having been trapped by the demons for so long, the demons who fully know who Jesus is, they have come to a lived-out realization of who Jesus is. They have, by having this battle within them, they know who Jesus is, and he doesn't have to question them. And think about how different that is from all the other people around Jesus and Mark, who keep asking, "Who is this? Who can do that? Why does he do that?" Immediately before this, at the end of chapter 4, Jesus calms the storm. His closest disciples are in the boat with him, and he calms the storm. And chapter 4 ends with his disciples terrified and asking each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and waves obey him." Even his disciples are saying, "Who is this?" Go to the next scene, and somebody filled with demons says, "I know who that is. That's Jesus, Son of the Most High God." And though I think the most fascinating part of Legion's story is at the end. After he's recognized who Jesus is, even though everybody else is asking the question, he begs Jesus to allow him to come along. And Jesus says no. And it starts to sound again like somebody is excited after being healed, excited about Jesus, and he's starting to shut him down. Here it sounds like messianic secret coming out again. But then Jesus tells him, "Go and tell what great things the Lord has done for you." He doesn't make him keep the secret. Everybody else he tells to keep quiet. But this guy, he says, "Go and tell." In fact, this is the only person in Mark that Jesus allows to go tell what he's seen. Or at least he says, "Go and tell." You know, think about that. Jesus will send a former demoniac to speak the news about the coming of Christ, but he tells his closest disciples not to say anything. It seems strange. But I also think it makes sense. Who are people more likely to listen to when it comes to this incredible life-changing power of God and the Messiah? A man who only days before they had seen terrifying and possessed by demons, who's now in his right mind? Or somebody who only months before was preparing to take over his father's fishing business? Now, that's not supposed to trivialize the message and the ministry of the apostles, but I think there's something about someone who's been dragged through hell until being rescued by the mercy of Jesus. He has a unique perspective. There's a certain reality to that person, a credibility because of what they've been through. How much can somebody understand the joy of who Jesus is and proclaim it after having seen the opposite? And this is the point where I had all kinds of stacks of lessons on top of it. But I don't want this image to get buried. Jesus reaches to somebody who says, "I have nothing in common with you." And Jesus says, "But you can." He says, "Get away from me. We have nothing to do with each other." And Jesus says, "Come here. I want to change your life and use you to change others." Now, the message here is not trying to tell this congregation, stop being uncomfortable with sinners, or make sure you're being nice to people when they come here, even if they're different. I don't think that's a big problem. I think that when people come here, we welcome them. I think we don't have a lot of worries about what do we have in common. I mean, if you can listen to Don 1 week and to me 1 week, we recognize there are differences, and we can work with different kinds of people. Right, so that's not, I think that would be kind of a shallow takeaway. Instead, I think what's important to recognize here is there are people in our lives, in our communities, who feel they have nothing in common with Jesus. We have people that through their experiences in life think that they are disqualified or unworthy or unaccepted in things spiritual. And it's a hard thing to try to address. There is hurt that people have that is keeping them from Jesus, because they feel like Legion did when the subject of Christianity or spirituality or church comes up, said that's just so far from my experience, so far from me. Maybe it's because of some of the hard economic times. You know, how many people struggling to keep their homes or having lost that struggle come to a church and they see plates going around and all they see is, oh, look at these people have enough money to give away and I am struggling for every cent. This isn't the place for me. Or, there is, for every two marriages in this country, there's one divorce. And maybe somebody who's been divorced has heard a Christian say in a well-meaning way, God hates divorce, and has heard that as God hates me. There are people who feel they don't belong. We need to do what we can to show Jesus to these people. And I don't want to speak about this as people far off. How many people very close to us have dealt with foreclosures, divorces, loss, pain? We need to do what we can to take Jesus' example here and show that they are not in a position that God doesn't care. They are not in a position where they have nothing in common with the gospel. And we need to do that not just because they need us. They need us to show them. We need to do that because we need them. The church needs people who have been through the darkness, been through the muck and the messiness, and can come out on the other side and have something so powerful to say about the gospel. We need that. Because that type of person can reach other people who have been through that situation more than middle-aged preacher who had a minor in Greek. We need to make sure that we are keeping our eyes open for these people who look at Jesus and say, I have nothing in common there. Maybe some of us have felt that way. Maybe some of us feel that way from time to time. I don't know. But I know that instead of avoiding these topics in the name of sensitivity and causing many people to retreat in embarrassment because they feel alone and desperate, the church needs to embrace those in these situations. They don't need our pity. We need their experience and strength. And we need them to teach us about Jesus' compassion to the hurting and the power of God to transform pain into faith. That's what I've got this morning. Like I said, this is going to be elegant and pretty, but it sometimes it's not. Sometimes we just have something that is worth spending some time looking at, and it needs to be put out there. And so I'm going to stop talking. If there's anything that you need to share, if there is any hurt, pain, darkness that you say you need to connect and get prayers and support from, this is a good time for it. If anybody needs baptistry to be opened and you say we need to meet Jesus in that way, we can do that now too. If there's anything we can do, please come as we stand and sing.
Have thine affections been nailed to thy cross? Is thy heart right with God? Dost thou count all things?